Well, but Caesar was talking at the meeting the other day, he was talking about organizing illegal.
¿Qué pasó con el calentón?
We've been doing that all over, but mostly up there.
Maybe, because that's people saturated.
Well, we'll have to talk to him and see what, you know, what he has in mind.
Illegals? We got in the San Diego County, that's only the people that are working right now. We don't even, we just ask people to come in, they're unemployed, yes, and would you like to sign this petition? They say, yeah, yes, and they sign it.
Illegal?
No, the immigrant workers are not, documented workers are not working, they're unemployed. Only those working are undocumented workers.
You're not working for them, you are not working for them. Are you working for them?
For the undocumented. They're on the fields, they
don't come.
No, they're on the fields, they sleep in caves. They sleep in caves.
We'll have to talk to Caesar about that, see what the deal is, because I have no idea what he wants, other than what he said. Well, he said that we're probably going to have to start organizing undocumented workers.
Yeah, because we try to organize, we don't ask if they have documents or not, we just.
Everybody go watch the cops.
Take care of everyone. I can't get a hold of them.
Huh?
Across the border, they're all being pressed, you know. All of the service centers at a meeting, Caesar, so maybe he's in that meeting.
All of what?
Service center.
What service center? I thought they were all here.
The La Paz service centers now, they're all in the meeting with Caesar right now, so maybe he's in the meeting.
But you're part of that too.
I know.
Okay. You know, we left out one very important thing. When we talked about losing the contracts, we talked about what happened to the workers again when we lost the contracts. We didn't talk about that. We didn't mention that they went right back where they had been. And for the most part, well, we mentioned what Ron Taylor had said and so on, but we didn't talk about the fact that by losing the contracts, after they'd had 3 years of a little freedom, a little democracy in the field, by being taken in under the Teamster contract instead of ours, with the exception of the wage rates, which they had to maintain more or less in order to keep their crews at all, they lost everything else that they had gained under the UFW contracts, and well, you all know that, but I think that definitely needs to be put in at this point, at the point where we talk about losing the contracts, because it isn't, you know, it isn't just a loss of some contracts, and that the workers, you know, they just switched over to another good contract. They just switched over to nothing, practically, because in many instances, I don't know how many, but certainly in the case of Gallo, for instance, as those of you that have read this leaflet know, about somewhere in the neighborhood of 85 to 90% of the workers at Gallo are not covered by the contract at all. So you can say, well, yeah, the Gallo workers have got a contract, yeah, but a few of them do. The year-round workers do, but the ones that come in under the contractors are not covered by the contract, and that's the bulk of the employees during the year, the ones that come in at harvest time. They're not covered by this contract for the teams. Even if it was any good, you know, not that they're missing all that much, but the Gallo, by not covering them, Gallo gets by free on all the insurance charges and all that he'd ordinarily have to pay if those workers were actually under contract to him instead of to the contractor. Now that's what this says. You probably, have you read that? The facts, why the workers want the UFWs, the AFL-CIO contract, and why the growers want the Teamsters.
What did it come on?
Well, you haven't seen it?
No.
Well.
It used to be real.
Huh?
What section? How does it do?
It's,
Have you seen the Mandel where? Have you seen the Mandel somewhere around? I think I lost it for about too much.
It's going out to press this week.
Yeah, so I understand.
It's going out to press this week. That's all I
read. You might as well not even get going on the script.
Here it is. It's right on page number 9. It says, and this has to do with the sweetheart contract, and they're explaining what this means. The labor contractors' supervised employees are excluded from coverage. Therefore, all picking crews are excluded. All picking crews. And so, about 90% of the farm workers are not protected.
Can I ask a question on that? Would that cover also like the semi-conductor area on that?
No.
It's just an exclusion of the country.
I can't answer that, but I think that it covers. See, those lettuce workers over there are not under contract to contractors, are they?
No. I was talking about the labor contractors. I was talking about that we have a few already. See, the labor contractor business is going out of business.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we have about 5 there.
But some of those contractors belong to associations, not the contractor.
Oh.
So they go ahead and deduct teams
to do
some stuff.
Oh, but what about for instance the Coachella Valley workers that are almost all under contract to contractors?
I've never seen one of the contractors.
You do?
I think so.
Oh. Well, the reason I wondered, because I've asked about this, and they,
I really like to find out.
And several people have said, no, that applies to a lot of those table grape contractors, and I'd like to find out.
That's right. Yeah. That would be really good. Too.
Yeah.
Never, I don't think anyone's ever been able to get one of those contracts. The workers have never seen one.
We don't even know whether they exist.
That's right, because, see, the organizers, I don't know what the label area is, they always talk about the contract, but there's no one, they always say, well, I don't have it with me. I don't even think they've got it.
Well, let's go to the office and I'll show you. That's what they say.
When you get the office, they can't even find it then.
Yeah.
It's in Washington. Francisco's got it.
No one's ever seen it before, as I know. No one said they've ever seen it.
Now see, the reason I wonder about Robert's question is this. It says, it continues here, where it says this. The growers, that's plural, make the legal point that workers working on their ranches, hired and supervised by labor contractors, are not their employees. This argument is made in reference to insurance, accidents, transportation, child labor, illegals, and subcontractors. Employers do not consider subcontractors to be part of the bargaining unit. But you see, they get out from under it. They avoid responsibility for all those things I just mentioned by saying, well, they're not under contract to us. They're working for the contractor.
So that is a problem for telling
them. I think we ought to find out.
Do
we have any lawyers? Are there any lawyers up here?
No, I don't see that. We got a good friend, a grower, who has signed up with the Teamsters, and just last week I met with him.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me a lot of information. And he said, anything you want to know, you ask him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I asked him several questions.
Well, ask him for a copy of the contract.
Why did you sign with the Teamsters?
Well, you
see. Did you ask him how he was selling his grapes?
Yeah. Well, he's a small grower and he sold his grapes. But see, one of the questions that I asked that my teacher made the statement about the 7 million batches on cold storages. Mm-hmm. I said that he was right on those figures. He said, no, he wasn't right, but the growers dropped the prices to $350 a box. And he said, anything you sell, you know, under $550, you're in a hole. Oh. With $550, you break even. And he gave me all the, everything on breakdown, you know, from like how much it costs to go over a box, you know, like on tinning, picking and tinning. And it's $1.25, and farming, that's $2, and for hauling, 15 cents. And like the TC, what is the Trade California Commission, that's 10 cents per box. You know. He gave me
the whole thing.
You know, yeah, I got it, you know. And,
well, I hope you haven't had it there for the whole year.
See, because see, the lawyer is Salinas, he called me, and he said that the growers have met, you know, in Bakersfield, and they have divided the market among themselves, you know. And so I asked this guy, he said, no, we met with the teamsters. We haven't got kind of a meeting, but we met with the teamsters a few days ago. Because you know the teamster on the teamster contract, I mean, according to them, after 10 days, you had to pay your dues. Well, now the teamsters want to set an amendment to the contract, you know, to make it 3 days. That means after 3 days of work, I mean, you have to pay your dues. But this guy, Al Capron, which is one of the public relations for the growers, he said, no, the contract says 10 days and we're going to stick to 10 days. Yeah. And also, he told me, he said, we didn't know that the growers going to open another office in Bakersfield. He said, the growers going to open another office, the Teamsters office in Bakersfield by the Kern County General Hospital.
The Teamsters are going to open?
Teamsters, yeah. Teamsters, exclusive for Jimara workers. Oh. Because Jimara workers, a big number of the Jimara workers, they come from Bakersfield.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so they can all
travel north.
And he told me, what else do you want to know? You know, I wasn't prepared because I thought that he was going to open Vietnam.
Well, we'll have a house meeting with him. Okay, well, the main thing about the Gallo contract is, though, that it, you know, this is certainly one of the main things. The other is, of course, that even the ones that are covered by the contract don't have any hiring hall, they don't have any seniority. Of course, you know, they are the year-round workers, but they've lost their real power, whatever power they had, with the loss of the hiring hall and of course with the seniority. Okay, I want to jump over to the next topic, which is the house meeting itself. What is a house meeting? So, you know, just in simple terms, what is it? I'm asking you, what does a house meeting look like?
A group of people get together around something, like maybe you want to inform them about something or teach them something or make them aware of something.
Or involve them in something.
Involve them.
Or recruit them. Or convert them. Whatever.
Do some things.
No. That's what the growers do. Yeah, that's right. Why do you think we have come to believe that the house meeting is the most effective way of organizing people? Guy explains what?
He's expecting you to talk. He's not necessarily listening to you. And you have a more relaxed atmosphere. You just be small and you come back.
I would really have a house meeting. I guess it's that, you know, I don't know. Guys say in English, confianza, you get confianza in once you get together. So that's what I think about, you know, that's why it helps organize. We're having a house with a group of people, you know, and then, you know, that confianza together with you and them, you know, once you, if they really turn on, if you really turn them on to what you're rapping about, you know, then the confianza opens up, you know, right there. And that's why, once you get that, you know.
Well, what is it about a house meeting that you can accomplish? No, what is it about a house meeting that allows you to get at the people better, allows you to understand the people, make friends with the people better than, say, a larger meeting.
Small groups.
Yeah, but what happens to the small groups?
Small groups. They know each other. Everybody that knows wants you to come.
Yeah.
Communication. You're on there, too.
Yeah, but what is it that can happen at a house meeting? Or what are some of the things that can happen at a house meeting between you and the people, between the organizer and the people, that can't happen very well at a larger meeting?
The personal relationship.
It's like you can find out what their problem is and find out where you find out what it is that they're thinking about. That's such a small group that you can really understand what their problem is and where what their attitudes are about the community, whatever you're talking about, and then you can answer what's right there. It's just a,
one thing, I don't know if this is it or not, but one thing that when you're at a house meeting, a smaller group of people, you can really see the inner feelings of a person by, you know, the eye contact, the other one watching the person, when they react to you. That in a larger meeting, you can't see the people that really react to you.
And I think, like, on a small meeting, I mean, the people have the freedom, you know, to speak out on, you know, on a large meeting, many people are, for several reasons, I mean, for that reason, I mean, you know, they don't let them speak out. I think by being on a small group, I think that on a house meeting, you would have a direct contact with them, you know, and that you have the opportunity to study, you know, at least some of the problems that they have. And in the meantime, I mean, you could pitch in some questions, you know, that could bring some answers, and you could find out what's going on. Like, let's say, for example, if you're meeting with some of the Jimara workers and you want to know what's going on in Jimara, you know. So I'm pretty sure that information would come up, you know, from the house meeting.
Well, let's take something real simple. In a big meeting, as you mentioned, not very many people talk. They're intimidated. They're afraid. For whatever reason, a lot of them feel that they'd like to ask a question, but they're afraid it's a dumb question. They don't want to make jackasses out of themselves. So they say, well, let somebody else ask a question, make a jackass out of himself. That way I won't have to be one, you know. So they don't say anything. Well, what happens if you don't ask questions? If somebody up there in the front of the room is saying things and you don't understand some of them and you don't ask the questions and nobody else asks the questions, what's going to happen when you leave the meeting and you go out and start telling people about what happened at that meeting? No, that's right. All you're going to be doing is spreading chismes, gossip, and probably a lot of misinformation. And I'll give an example. When I first started organizing, before most of you were born, out in the citrus belt, San Bernardino, and I didn't know how to organize, and I was just learning. And in Robert's Rules of Order, at the back of the book there, it tells you how to set up associations, you know, how to organize an association, I remember. So I didn't have anybody else that knew how to organize, so I thought, well, maybe Mr. Roberts has got something here. So I started following his stuff, and it said, well, you get the word around to the people. So I mimeographed some leaflets, and I went door to door through the barrio there in east, on the west side and Riverside in San Bernardino. And, you know, gave the people the leaflets, and I went around to the various stores and so forth and talked to the small business people. And so as a result, I guess I got about 30 people to come out. And so we talked and discussed the problems and elected officers and temporary officers and all that, like Robert's Rules of Order says. And when we got all through and the meeting was over, then I, you know, there were a few of them hanging around talking, and so, you know, they started asking me questions then, because there were just a few of them. Well, but from the questions that they were asking, I knew that it was just as though each one had been to a different meeting. You know, they say there were 30 people there. It was as though there'd been 30 different meetings, because they each had different ideas about what I'd said, you know. And we were talking, for instance, about protecting themselves against oppression, discrimination, prejudice, and so forth. And some of them had gotten the idea that I was trying to stir up racial trouble. You know, that what I wanted the Chicanos to do was to get organized and go across the tracks and beat the hell out of the gringos over there. I mean, you know, so it began to, you know, that kind of got kind of out of hand as far as, because nobody had asked hardly any questions at the meeting. So I realized that I had gone about that the wrong way, so I knew that I wasn't getting the message across. Somebody then, a guy by the name of Ignacio Lopez, some of you may know of him, used to run a newspaper called El Espectador out there in the Citrus Belt, Pomona, and he just died, I think it was last year. And he said, "No, Fred, you're just doing it all wrong." He said, "You see, well, to organize to organize another organization is to be a failure. We don't need any more organizations. We've got too many organizations already that don't do anything. What we need to do is to bring them all together. That way we unite the Colonia. Bring all the organizations together. You know, the Loquias and the Patrioticas and the Jim Crow post of the American Legion, the Catholic post of the American Legion, and the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, and so forth." So, wow, I thought, gee, that sounds pretty good. You know, it's a shortcut. You don't have to go out and get the people. You just go to these various organizations where the people are already organized and bring them all together, and you pull a rabbit out of a hat, and you've got an organization. So I did that. We got about the same number of people. And we started to register the voters, and about 2 weeks later, on the weekends, which is when they were registering, you know, they could come out and help the most, well, none of them showed up. Well, that happened to be the Cinco de Mayo. They were on a parade that day. In other words, all the workers went on a parade, and there wasn't any voter registration done. And that taught me that we don't want to organize by means of other organizations. Now, this is what has happened. In many of the boycott operations throughout the country, they'll go to a block club or a neighborhood society or a labor union local or a church group or whatever, and they'll assign certain stores to those groups. And that's okay, and then to the high school kids and so forth. And that's okay as long as those groups don't have an issue of their own to tackle. As soon as they do, the same thing will happen as happened up in Berkeley during the Safeway. When we were on that horrible mess, you know. My son was had to go up to Washington on the weekend, so he asked me if I'd sort of, you know, tend the store while he was gone. And so I took all the bumper strips off my car and took my buttons off and so forth, and I went around so that they wouldn't think I was part of the boycott just to see what they were doing, right, to the various store. I got to Berkeley, got this store in Berkeley, and I drove in the driveway. There were three people at another entrance talking to each other. They couldn't care less about me. I could have just, you know. So I just stopped, put the brakes on, and turned off the motor, just stopped right there in the driveway and called to them. "Oh, yeah, right on." And I said, "Well, what's this all about?" I said, don't shop there. Don't shop in Safeway. And I said, "Why?" "Oh, because Safeway is real bad. They've been treating the workers very badly and so on. And they're one of the worst offenders and all that." And I said, "Well, where can I buy grapes?" "I don't know, just don't buy them here." "Well," I said, "that doesn't make any sense. What's the sense to that?" "Well, that's the way it is. We just don't want you to buy grapes here at Safeway. You can buy them anyplace else." And I said, "Oh, that doesn't make..." I said, "What about the co-op? Are there union grapes there?" "Well, I don't know." And I said, "Well, by golly, you better find out, don't you think? Because if they're union grapes someplace, don't you think you ought to be sending people over there?" "Yeah, that's a good idea." I said, "While you're at it, you might find out maybe there's some other stores around here that have union grapes." Well, my son came back. I said, "Boy, you better do something about that group over there covering those two stores in Berkeley." He said, "Oh, well, we don't have to worry about them anymore. That's a block club, and they're fighting a traffic signal case. One of the kids got badly hurt, and so they're trying to get a traffic. So they aren't helping us anymore. They told us about it last Saturday morning, the same day they're supposed to be out there, you know, picketing." Well, these are just a few of the things that you run into in trying to organize through mass meetings or mini mass meetings. They really aren't mass meetings, or through organizations that are already set up. So what we've been doing all throughout the boycott operations is to get people to quit doing that. You know, get various other organizations to come out, because you can't count on them when you need them. Naturally, you use them wherever you can, but you just can't count on them. And you can't. The thing though that you can do at a house meeting that can't be done at either one of those other kinds of with other groups is that you can feel each other out. The organizer can feel the people out, and the people can feel the organizer out. Because there's just a few of them there, they can talk a lot to the organizer can talk a lot to them. By the end of the meeting, they know something about each other. They've got something going between them if the organizer has done a good job. So that's another thing that you can't get out of any other kind of meeting. Is a chance to really bear down on the people, find out something about them, make friends with them, win them. That's the name of it. A lot of people say, well, that isn't the name of it. You shouldn't have to worry about the organizer making friends. What we're trying to do is to make the people make friends with the farm workers. Well, the organizer, that's true. The organizer is sort of a conduit. He's a channel. Sort of channeling that friendship with the farm workers that a lot of people don't have, but want to have. Something else that happens at a house meeting that you have a pretty hard. First of all, you get the story across straight, which you can't do at the mass meeting. I gave you that example: 25 people having 25 stories about what happened at a mass meeting. But at a house meeting, when they go away from that house meeting, they not only know the story themselves pretty well, because they've asked questions and you really had a chance to explain it to them. They aren't going to keep all of it in their heads, but they keep an awful lot more than they had when they came to that meeting. So that when they go away from that house meeting, they'll be able to tell other people better than they have ever been able to tell other people about the struggle of farm workers. And this is very important, because what it does is it helps to start this rippling out. You know, you think, well, I just talked to 5 people tonight, gee, that isn't very much. Or during the week, I had 5 house meetings and there were 4 people at each meeting, so I only talked to 20 people this week. Well, it isn't true, because you indirectly talk to many more than that by really getting the story across in a dramatic way to the people. And you've been able to sink those points into the people so that they can pass them on, pass the truth instead of chisme and gossip on to other people. And this is very important. Something else that you can do at a house meeting, or that happens at a house meeting, that doesn't happen anyplace else for the most part, is the help that you get from the other people that are there. You know, it's the pressure from the other people on people who are resisting you. How many of you have held house meetings? Well, I know that then some of you had the experience where somebody in the house meeting resists you in some way. You try to get them to hold a house meeting and they begin to give you alibis for not holding it, you know. You say, well, you know, all of my friends are right here in this room, and you don't want to say it, because you say, my God, you poor lonely soul, if these are the only friends you had. But you've already made friends with some of the other people in the group, just by force of your own personality, because they like you. So whether else to, or else you know you've made a friend of the person at whose house you're already having a house meeting, or else they wouldn't be having it there. And so you can usually count on getting some help from somebody at that house meeting in convincing others who are resisting you. And that's a lot of help. The other otherwise you could say as I did when I first started organizing, when I found out that those other two ways of organizing, by mass meeting and by organization of organizations, were no good, well, then I went to one-to-one. I used to go out and spend the whole evening in one person's house. And, you know, you could really feel each other out very well, and you could get the story across very well. The only thing you couldn't do was, in case he began to resist you at any point, you didn't have anybody there to give you any help. You were doing it all alone. Whereas if one of his friends was there to side with you, to put pressure on him, that peer pressure, they call it, you know, well, you'd be better off. Besides saving a lot of time by getting four people together, or five people, or six people, instead of just meeting one family every night, which I was stupid enough to do until some farm worker straightened me out. And so you get that kind of help. I'll never forget just to give you a recent example, when I was in Los Angeles last year, putting on a training program, and then I went out with the people to their first house meetings down there to observe them in action. You know, we went to this one place down in Venice, and the woman that called the house meeting was an old lady, about 75 years of age. She was blind in one eye and just barely able to see out of the other one, and she spent her days on the telephone organizing people. She was just on that phone day and night. So after the organizer that was there got through making his pitch, and he started in on the hustle, you know, to get people to hold house meetings, get it become active in picketing and all that. Well, he started, he got resistance right away. He hadn't done too good a job in selling the people on himself or the program. And so the lady said, well, gee, I don't know, I don't have, my house is very small. See, having people there in that little tiny room of mine. So this woman held the house meeting, Sadie was her name, said, oh, no problem. That's cool. Because I have, where would you like to hold the house meeting? Right here in Venice, or Ocean Park, or Santa Monica? Because I have people in each one of these places with big front rooms. And we can line up at their houses for you. So where do you want to hold it? Which one of the places would you like to see? It was really embarrassing. She knew her own friends, you know. Well, finally the woman said, oh, well, maybe my front room isn't all that small. I guess I could hold it in my front room. She didn't want to hold it in somebody else's house. She just wanted to get away from it. And then he asked the next person, and the next person began to talk about, well, gee, I don't have hardly any friends. Because I said, you know, like, well, they're all here. And so he said, well, you know, don't say that. Remember, I'm your friend, Sadie. I know how many friends you've got. Your friends are my friends. So I tell you what we'll do. You go ahead and agree to hold a house meeting, and I'll help you get the friends there, because I know who your friends are, you know who mine are, and so between the two of us, we'll just fill the house. Well, you don't get very many people like Sadie, but that's the kind of, you can get a little of what Sadie had. She was marvelous. We didn't need any organizer in Venice. We had Sadie. She could do it all alone. As a matter of fact, she's practically done. We'll still try and find Loopy and get some wood while we're eating. Okay. Okay, just before we broke up, we talked about the various disadvantages of trying to organize by way of a sort of a mini mass meeting, and what these disadvantages were. Mainly that you just can't get at people, and they can't get at you. You don't get a chance to really sell yourself, because that's one of the main things that you do at a house meeting, which you can't do too well at a mass meeting. Some people do a pretty good job. Dolores is marvelous. She can get people to, she just wraps them around her fingers. Some people are just great at it. But there are other things that, no matter how great you are as a speaker and so forth, personality, you still can't do it at a mass meeting. But I remember when I first started organizing, and I asked this Nacho Lopez, I mentioned to you, well, do you think I can really sell the Chicanos on the idea of organizing? He said, no, you don't have to worry about that. They want to organize, all right. What you have to worry about is selling yourself to them. And that's what I was talking about before.
Where was he from?
Huh?
Where was he from? Nacho Lopez.
Nacho Lopez from Pomona.
We had one in San Diego, but he was a
faithful. Oh, no. No, it's not the same. I guess, well, I've known about several Nacho Lopez. The other one that I mentioned, the reason I mentioned the organization of organizations was that some people have the idea that they can take a shortcut and find people inside of organizations, and well, the shortcut turns out to be a detour, and the people that they try to get through organizations to become part, say, of a poor people's union don't turn out to be very good, because most of their loyalty is already given to some other organization. And we want to say 9/10 of their loyalty to somebody else, some other organization. We want to get 1,000% of the loyalty of the poor people for our organization, for their organization with us. Well, and then we talked about what we could do in a house meeting in terms of making use of the people that are sympathetic to our cause already and will help us sell other people. How we have to give and take there, how we get to know each other, make friends, and win them, and so on. Because that's when we find out that's when a really good organizer or a potentially good organizer finds out that there are things happening inside of him or her at a house meeting that he or she didn't even know was inside of him or her, and they start coming out. You know, when you really have made up your mind that you're going to win these people and get them, and whether you call it warmth or charm or whatever it is, it starts coming out. I'm not talking about, you know, sitting at home and planning a charm chart and, you know, coming and turning on the charm faucets and all that. But it just comes out naturally if you really want to do it badly enough. And some people have it. I think most people have it. It's just a question of being able to release it, you know, when you're with other people. In other words, if you want it badly enough, you'll get it. It'll start pouring out. What I'm really getting at, I guess, is that a house meeting is not just another opportunity to make a lecture, to give a lecture to some people, and then say, well, that's all I have to say. Good night, folks. Good night. Good luck. So forth. Yeah, God bless you. That's not what a house. See, we have. Over the years out in Boycott, we have missed so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people by doing it that way. We go to all these big meetings, you know, make speeches, and never get hardly any of the people to do anything. We just think we're educating the people. Well, that's just one of the things that we're doing while we're out there, you know, is educating them in order to pave the way for getting our hooks into them and getting them to participate in our program. In other words, we educate them in order to organize it. It's an organizing tool. But we don't just make a lecture and then leave. That's just step number one. Then we really got to go to work on them. And unless we have done a good job during all of the educational part of the house meeting, by way of putting very subtle type pressure on them, you know, and I'm not talking about a whole lot. This is the quantity of the pressure, it's the quality of the pressure we put on people at the house meeting. It gradually gets them into the mood so that when we go after during the hustle at the end, and we really are pouring it into them to get them to do what we want them to do, which is to hold a house meeting, or to go out on the line, or to become a human billboard, or whatever else the action program is, they'll be ready. I didn't hear the first part.
I said that along with meeting that we are having, you know, there will be a time, I mean, when some of us or those who have had some experience in our meeting would have the opportunity, you know, to express some of the experience that you encountered.
Sure.
Because, I mean, you know, many of us probably would have conducted our meetings, other of us have done it.
Right.
Just some of the experience that you would have, you know, just...
What we're going to do, Paul, is to, right now, we're going to talk about how we go about getting a hold of the first person. Well, you got to start someplace. So you start with person number one. So we'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about how we get a hold of them. Then we'll talk about how we go and call them. Then we'll talk about the next step, which is the house meeting. And right there, when we start really bearing down on the house meeting, then we want to get all the ideas from all of you that have been holding house meetings about the problems that you've had or the successes you've had and so forth. Put them all in the pot, okay? Okay, how do we get a hold of person number one? Say the person that we either want to hold a house meeting, himself or herself, or a person that is going to lead us to somebody else, to help us put pressure on somebody else to hold a house meeting. How do we get a hold of that person number one?
I think a few ways, I know it's worth it. So you can contact them at the church, and they've got an organization. Well, you know, ministers always got organizations in the church. It's just a good way to start out with, you know, support, maybe some place to work a little bit, and have, you know, a meeting, and then from there, ask for house meetings. And next, I guess, you know, if there's somebody to follow, we can house meeting.
Well, I think in view of what I said a little while ago, though, about trying to organize through other organizations, if you can avoid that, it's better not to do it through some other organization. If you can't get it, you know, if you can't get it any other way, then go to the organization. See, what happens is most organizations, and those of you that have been to them will agree, I'm sure, you're just one item on the agenda. You know, whether it's a church organization or a labor union or any other kind of organization, they're having a meeting. They have their own agenda, and they put you down for so many minutes, and then, you know, you make your pitch and you try to win some people, and if you're lucky, why, maybe somebody will agree. But usually, they don't turn out too well.
What if you find one person that you know is sympathetic and can draw other friends?
Yeah.
That'd be a beginning.
Oh, sure. And this business about, what's your name?
David.
That David brought up about the church is very good. The best way, I would say one of the best ways to organize house meetings in a Catholic community, especially, would be to get somebody from the church, a popular priest, if you can get, or a nun. I would even say a nun before a priest, and a lot of the priests haven't reordered their priorities yet, you know, just a hell of a lot of the nuns have already. As a matter of fact, sometimes I think they're ahead of us, some of them. And so if we can get in touch, I mean, if we are already in touch with a nun in the community where we're working, or nuns, or a priest who's sympathetic, the very best way I've ever had, the the fastest and probably the most effective way to get out of house meeting is through one of them in a Catholic community.